I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2-1, and that ball is hit high and deep out into right field. Adolis going back to the track, and this one's gone. Again, just over the wall. Very similar home run to the one he hit in the first. It's a two-run blast here to give Arizona a 4-0 lead.
Final hour, kind of fist pump time. We were getting excited. It was starting to rev up a little bit. We're getting Rocker and DeGrom on Friday, and then Max Scherzer, and then and Nivaldi on the mound. World Series rematch, and then they go out and get smoked by the Diamondbacks, 6-0, and we got to take some more lumps from our Odyssey Baseball Insider, our buddy Brett Boone, joining us here live on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube on your home of the World Series champs. Good morning, Brett. How are you?
Morning, guys. I'm doing all right.
I like that dark room lighting that you have in there right now. It's kind of.
I don't know how that is. It was lighter earlier. Now it's dark.
Okay, so you're not like keeping the. You said you're a morning person. You ruined your wife's trip to Hawaii, I think, because right. You're just itching to work and ever. So when we come in here at 5 and the lights just get turned on for all the cameras, it's like when you're a kid and your mom yanks open the curtain. Yeah. But you seem like that parent. You just crack on all the lights. It's time for everyone to get the day going.
Actually, no. Maybe at one point I was. I'm a little more aware of others. I try to do my best. I do my part. But when push comes to shove, yeah, the lights are going on.
I saw, I actually got to mention this. I forgot to mention this to you when I got back. I saw Brett Boone on Saturday. We're rolling into the Cowboys team hotel in Cleveland, and I don't know what it was. They had this jumbo screen where they were just rolling facts about Major League Baseball players. Mm. And when we walk up, there's a big card, a big picture of Brett Boone up there, and it's rolling details about his career. I have no idea why, but it was right there when we were walking in.
Well, very cool. You never know when I'm going to pop up.
Brett, you're like Beetlejuice.
Brett, is it better for DeGrom to start this year, get the cobwebs, get the rust off, or just be extra, extra cautious and let him come back next year?
No, I think it's important to get out there this year for his sanity. Mentally for him, it's going to be a check the box type thing. It's like, all right, I got back in action. I'm ready to go. Now going into, if he can get 2 or 3 starts under his belt and be healthy, feel good about it, have some success, he can go into the offseason and treat it like a normal offseason. And then all of a sudden in spring training, yeah, he finished the month of September and he's got some reps, because you go an entire year and you know, it's different when you're a little bit younger. DeGrom's not one of the youngest guys on that team. It's different earlier in your career to miss time. But when you miss an entire Major League Baseball season, that's a big deal. I mean, your body's used to doing a certain thing year after year after year. And all of a sudden, if you just miss an entire campaign, let's call it, it's different. And it's different coming back from that. At least if you can get 2 or 3 starts in, feel good about it, have some success, the offseason becomes more normal. And then you go into spring training, get ready for the 25 season. I think it's important.
All right, when in terms of what you're looking for out of him, you know, a pitcher that is, you know, got all these accolades, is it just, I mean, are you simply looking at velocity? Are you looking at, you know, how is his command? You know, because the first start, I mean, he may not have that command, right? It may be a little bit rust.
I don't think you're going to be looking for anything. You're just be looking for him to get through whatever pitch count they have on him. I know today we're big on pitch counts, whatever his restraints are, what they want him to get through. I think you physically just want to see him get through it healthy, feel good, give you a smile at the end of the day when he hands you the ball and goes, hey, that went well. And I don't think location, velocity, any of that is going to have anything to do with it.
Brett, we have a very highly touted player, Kumar Rocker, making his debut this week. Mm-hmm. How much of a major league debut is simply managing your emotions?
I'll tell you, I think everybody's story is different, but mine was, you know, they were talking about it back then because it was a third generation thing. So it never happened before. And I got kind of caught off guard. I knew I was getting called up in September, but I got called up a little bit earlier in August, and they kind of played a trick on me. I got in an argument with my manager. He said, no, I'm just kidding. You're going to the big leagues. So for me, you know, that kind of people thought in my situation, oh, it's not a big deal. You grew up in that environment. I grew up at Veterans Stadium, tagging along, watching my dad. Believe me, it's one thing being a little kid, being around these guys and probably being a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. And another thing, when it's your occupation, it's your job, you're no different than anybody else. So I remember that night, staying up all night playing solitaire, calling my dad, calling my grandpa, getting on a plane the next morning, talking to the guy next to me. It was my first time ever in first class. And him saying, Hey kid, what are you doing up here? Cause when I got called up, I looked like I was about 16. I said, I'm going to play my first game in the big leagues tomorrow. And he goes, no, you're not. I said, you want to watch? You want to come to the game? He goes, I can't come to the game, but I'm going to watch. He goes, what are you going to do? I said, I can't tell you what the result's going to be, but a ball's going to get hit hard somewhere. And I started laughing, went up there, made my debut. It was like a dream, though. I hadn't slept. I did the press. I took batting practice real quick. Next thing you know, I was in the game. And I don't really remember that first at bat too much, just thinking, all right, just don't embarrass yourself. And I really, the last thing I remember is we turned a double play late in the game. We were in Baltimore to finish it. But pretty cool. And then the grind starts. Now it's back to, for a young kid coming up, playing in the minor leagues is one thing, having success. You got it. Everybody does it. They're stepping stones. But when you get to the big leagues, there's something different about a big league stadium. It's more open. It's just a different stage. It's almost like being a rock band playing at the corner bar. And then all of a sudden, you're going to open Madison Square Garden. There's a different feeling to be in a big league stadium. And they used to tell me, yeah, it's that third deck. When they stack that deck, you know, as far as the, you know, level A, B, and C, said that's when it separates the big leaguers from the minor leaguers. So,
you know, talking about that, managing emotions from a first start, obviously you were somebody who played in the field. When Kumar Rocker's going to be stepping up there and it's every single pitch, and it's something where you've got to manage those emotions consistently throughout the game. It's not like a plate appearance here or when the ball gets hit to you. How difficult is that specifically for a pitcher when they've got to, you know, deal with that for over the course of, you know, 2 hours potentially?
Well, the thing about that too is you're in action. You're part of every play. So it gets a little bit more. You're going to go back to, you know, what you've been doing your whole life. It's still baseball. And, you know, as much as I talk about big leagues versus minor leagues, yeah, there is a big deal. There is a big difference. But it's baseball. At the end of the day, it's baseball. You've done this a million times. You're just doing it at the highest level now. So it's something that he'll get through, he'll handle. We all handle it differently. We all have different experiences, but it's pretty special. And it gets a new chapter started in your life.
Former big leaguer, Odyssey baseball insider, Brett Boone with the Brett Boone podcast here on Sean, RJ, and Bobby. Look, we only have one division that is within three games. It's the AL East. It's a half a game with your brother. 3.5 in the Central, 4.5 in the West, 8 in the NL East, 8.5 in the Central, 4.5 in the NL West. What are you paying the most attention to down the stretch of the season?
Well, I think it's been a pillow fight between the Yankees and Baltimore all year. They've been neck and neck. I think right now Yankees might have them by half a game. That's going to come to here's the one thing. And a lot of things are going on in New York. DJ LeMahieu's having a really tough go of it. He just landed on the IL. The starting rotation, it's been an influx. You just got Schmidt back, who I think is going to be an intricate part to this team down the stretch. I don't really look for anything. I think I look at the two teams. They're both playoff caliber teams. They're both going to make the playoffs. That's kind of a prerequisite. That's kind of been established at this point. So now it becomes the players. Of course, you want to win the division. It's important. But I just think in today's game, it's just not that important. I think New York, their bullpen, if there's a question mark, it's that bullpen right now. And it's Clay Holmes finishing games. He's been obviously a great closer in the game for years now. But this year, some things have come up where I believe he's blown 12 saves. And everybody's asking me, well, why do you keep putting him out there? Well, when you have the luxury, when you're winning games and you pretty much know you're going to the playoffs, you have the luxury as a manager, I think, to give a little bit longer leash to definitely veteran players and players that have done it in the past to work it out. If you were fighting for a playoff spot, you got to do what you got to do. But I think that's the one concern for the Yankees. is that bullpen and how does it set up when we get to that postseason? Is it going to be Clay Holmes at the end of the game? He's been very shaky. And when you get to that playoffs and when it's do or die, you got to know what you're going with. So I think right now they're going to do a little bullpen by committee, play matchups more than just give the ball to Clay in the ninth inning. And maybe it'll settle him down because the stuff is still there. Even though I'm 55 years old, I can sit on my couch and I know what plays and what doesn't play. I know guys that I don't want to get off the couch and grab a bat. And I know guys, hey, maybe I could even get a hit right now off him. Clay Holmes is not one of those guys. His problems have been control. He's been behind in the count a lot. And that's going to be the key to the Yankees down the stretch. Keeping that core healthy. Obviously, it's a, you know, a big time. A lot of the emphasis has been put on Soto and Aaron Judge, two of the best hitters in the game. Stanton's got to be a big presence going into the postseason if the Yankees want to have a chance. But I'm just looking at the landscape of both leagues and all the teams. Man, there's so many options and there's so many. Yeah, they could do it. Uh-huh. Well, they can do it too. You know, there's so many. So there's not, it's not clear cut like it has in the past where you can kind of narrow it down to four teams. Yeah, these are the four best teams in baseball. And I think, and usually at the end it plays out and you go, yeah, it's what we thought. With today's landscape and the parity that's in the game today, man, anybody could win, which makes for a pretty exciting postseason.
Brett, you mentioned Judge. He hasn't had a home run in 14 games, which is for him, it's a lot. Two things. Yeah. One, is that kind of in it? Does that get in your head after some point where it's this many games? And then the other, does this kind of bring Bobby Witt Jr. into the MVP discussion more?
I don't think it brings Witt into the discussion. For me. You know, I watch Aaron play. I just think he's heads and tails above everybody else right now. I just think he's better and by a decent margin than everybody else in the game. Bobby Witt Jr. taking nothing away, playing a key position at shortstop. And I do add weight to playing shortstop. It's by far the toughest position on the field to play. That being said, you got a 6'8 Aaron Judge roaming in center field, which is also a very a coveted position, and what Aaron's doing and the way they pitch around him now. I thought for a while there, and I don't have any input on this. If my brother asked me, you know, for advice, I'll give him advice. Sometimes he takes it, sometimes he doesn't. For me, I think it would have been a little better to have Soto behind Aaron Judge. That being said, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. I'm also a believer in that. They both had MVP type years, and to kind of flip flop them in the lineup at this point, maybe doesn't make that sense. Maybe it doesn't make that much sense. So probably prudent to just keep it the way it is. For me, it's not a question. It's been Aaron Judge from the beginning. He will get hot again. You look at his April and what he's done since April. So yeah, you're going to have lulls when you're not hitting home runs, but seems like when he starts hitting them and he starts clicking, they come in bunches.
Brett Boone here on The Fan. I was looking at one of your podcast recaps and it said, turning two with Booney talks fashion, getting booed as a player, NL wild card, and Dak Prescott. What were you talking about when it comes to our quarterback?
Dak, they were just talking about his contract, and that got brought up. What I think and you know, how that affects the landscape and your teammates, and we were just talking about when it changed from my father's generation to my generation, when the money started getting pretty big, and how that affected, and what players from the past think. And now all of a sudden, wow, I remember my last contract I signed after the 01 season, and it was a big deal. It was a lot of money. But I look at that contract I signed compared to the guys now, and it's like, well, that's $9 million a year is like peanuts compared to what these guys make. Now you'd be a mediocre player and make 15. So it's all relative. It happens. I think it's, and we discussed a little bit the battles through the union with the Players Association, and to get to the point where the players have that luxury of making so much money today. And that was kind of the premise of it, but we just touched on Dak and making $60 million a year and what that's like. Obviously I couldn't answer it. I've never made $60 million a year.
Now, I'm just curious on the boo thing though, because you know the famous, they're not saying boo, they're saying Lou. Could you tell the difference between boos and Boone?
Oh.
When they were chanting for you? About,
rare times, I always hid behind that is, of course, they're booning me without question. But if you look around the 96, 97 bubblegum cards of mine, I had some lean years in Cincinnati. I was coming off a couple of really good years in Cincinnati early in my career. But 96, 97, I really had a tough time offensively. And they started to seep in, you know, I could tell the difference. You tell yourself one thing, but you feel it. And the basis of that question was, what's it like to be booed and how much does it hurt? And it's real and you feel it. And as much as the athletes, we have that persona, we want to have that persona of, you know, we're built of steel and nothing really affects us and we don't care and we move on. No, that hurts, especially when you're hometown fans, because you want to do so good for them. Every contract you sign, at least I can speak in my experience, when I signed a contract, yeah, the money was great, but that's not why I play. I don't get satisfied with that. I want to challenge myself to live up to that contract, and I want to do it for the fans and for the city and be the best player I can. And when you're not playing well and fans are getting on you, I didn't take it personal. I wasn't angry at them. I was kind of frustrated with myself for not playing better to because in Cincinnati at that particular time, man, it took a lot for them to boo me. Because they had cheered me so much, and I knew, wow, if they're booing me, he goes in different stages. It's like, oh, give him a break. He's having a rough time. He's got to get better. But we still cheer Brett, and all of a sudden they start to boo you. You know you're struggling. You got to make a swing change. And I ended up doing that after 97, and I came back with a big 98 season. But yeah, as an athlete, it hurts, especially when the hometown visitors. You can take it as a compliment when they boo you. But when your hometown's doing it, it's tough.
Good stuff, Booney. We'll do it again next time. Thank you.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Brett Boone, host of the Brett Boone Podcast, an Odyssey original featuring the most notable names in baseball and all around sports every week. Let's start previewing the Saints with Nick Eatman, DallasCowboys.com, next on The Fan.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's start getting you ready for the Cowboys and the Saints Sunday at noon. It's a 9 o'clock pregame on this radio station. Your home of America's team is 105.3 The Fan. Friday, we'll have Mike McCarthy live at 6:30, replay at 8:40 as the Firehouse tour continues from Firehouse number one in Burleson. So we'll all be out there. If Bobby shows up on time, that'll be on Friday with you. Brand new giveaway. Mike McCarthy at 6:30. And we're going to start getting you ready for New Orleans. RJ Choppy, guess the point spread.
6.5.
On the dot. Are you looking at it?
No, I bet it. I bet it yesterday.
Is part of a parlay or on its own?
It's on its own. Parlays are sucker bets, Bobby. Sucker bets.
Nick Eatman, DallasCowboys.com, brought to you by the Windstar World Casino and Resort. Proud to be the official casino of the Dallas Cowboys. Please game responsibly. While we wait to get Nick on, Terrence Steele redoing his deal. What does that mean?
He's got a restructure. So basically they are taking money, turning it into bonus, and shuffling it down the road. So they clear up a little over $4 million in cap space this year, not for any sort of a move that they'll want to, you know, get to this season. This is likely about rolling cap space over so that they have some flexibility next year. But yeah, they do a restructure there, and that's ultimately just going to make the financial burden a little more down the road.
Trayvon Diggs said, in terms of the workload or the amount of Mike Zimmer's defense that they unleashed on the Browns, he said, that was just a sample. We got like 50 calls, and we only ran probably like 3 of them. So there you go. Now, when you look at the Saints game, before they took on Carolina, maybe you're looking at this as a joke, right? A beatdown. I would have. Like, they're going to handle New Orleans in Arlington.
They usually do, right? And this is what they do to bad teams.
Yes.
And I assume New Orleans is a bad team, right? But generally, and this goes back, seemingly 20 years. The Cowboys, when they get a bad team at home, they handle them.
I'm glad you brought up the Cowboys in the past against a bad team, because Bill Belichick was telling a story the other day on his pod about him and Jimmy Johnson when the Cowboys were getting set to take on the Browns, beat them down, and Belichick wanted a little help after.
They were just too much for us that day. They really were. And so after the game, I called up Jimmy you know, Cleveland's in the AFC, Dallas is in the NFC. We weren't really competing against each other very much. And I said, Jimmy, you know, can you help me out? Like, tell me what you guys saw and, you know, what you think we could work on or do better. And Jimmy said, Bill, you know, I really didn't watch you guys. I just saw you a couple times in preseason. We didn't even do a scouting report on you because, honestly, you guys were terrible. That was humbling for me when Jimmy said, you know, we didn't even do a scouting report on you guys.
I remember this game. This was the opening week of the 91 season, I think. I think it was Bill's first year there. And I grew up a Browns fan, and the Cowboys hadn't done anything yet. And I wasn't following other teams necessarily. And the Browns, I saw the score because the game wasn't on. And the Browns, they lost, like, I want to say it was like 22-9 or 23-9. And I was like, they lost to the Cowboys? Like that?
That was embarrassing.
At that time, because as you know, when I was probably what, 12 years old at the time, all I knew of the Cowboys at that point was like the 1-15 year or the end of the Landry years where they weren't any good.
26-14, though. You were close. You were close on that score.
All right.
Speaking of Belichick, he'd be the ones that you're kind of paying attention to with new rules, including the kickoff ones. And you went and did a recap of week one.
Yeah, so I went and charted the Cowboys kickoff, see how they would approach it. And I already knew Bones was going to do something. He was going to get his rocks off on trying to really, really scheme the hell out of this new kickoff thing.
By the way, this worked for the league. The intent worked. Touchback percentage last year, 73%. This year, 64% from week one. Less touchbacks. Average field position. Last year, your own 26. This year, your own 30. Kick return touchdowns all of last year, 4. This year, already 1.
Okay.
So it worked. It worked.
So the touchback last year was at the 25, right? It was at the 25 last year?
Mm-hmm.
So, you were plus 1 yard. And then this year, the touchback is at either the 20 or the 30, depending on it. So,
yeah, but the touchback percentage.
Right.
And it was a 10% difference so far.
Absolutely. So, here we go.
Scored a quarter of the touchdowns.
They did. Tell me if this was worth the risk on what the Cowboys did. So, they had 3 touchbacks to the 30. So, a touchback to the 30 is you kick it into the end zone.
Yes.
They had 1 touchback at the 20, and that means it bounces in the landing zone.
Yes.
And then rolls into the end zone. You pick it up, touchback. If you catch it in the landing zone, you got to return it. You can't touch back there. So they did 1 of those on the 20. The rest, they kicked in the landing zone and returned, respectively, to the 27, the 25, the 25, and the 32. So in all, including the touchback to the 20, 5 of their kickoffs went into the landing zone and were returned or returnable. That was an average starting field position of the 27-yard line. So their plan gained them an average of 3 yards. Is that 3 yards worth the risk of the return touchdown?
No.
As opposed to just kicking it deep every time, because Aubrey can easily kick it through the end zone every time. They didn't move it back, right? It's still the same.
On which one? With the kicking it straight through the end zone?
Yeah, it's still the same, right?
No, isn't that starting at the 30 this
year? As opposed to the 35? Okay, so
it's 25 instead of the 30. Oh, you're moving back for the kick point.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 35.
Yeah. So
I'm asking.
It's still the same, right? So, like, he could easily kick it deep. There's no doubt there. So my question, yeah, it's like, why would you not just kick it deep instead of those 3 yards? As the Browns' best offense in this game probably was their chance of scoring on a kick return. Why would you give them that chance?
Yeah.
Why would you not just kick it deep and save you cost yourself 3 yards? That, to me, is like Bobby's horrible boss's analogy the other day. Like, yeah, we'll buy your drinks. We'll take care of your drinks.
I think they're just feeling it. I think they believe Aubrey can consistently kick it in the landing zone and get it out of the end zone. I think they're just trying to feel out what is the best method. Our coverage good enough that we can get down there where we can stifle this out? Can we do this or that? But I think they're going to squib it into the landing zone more frequently than other teams.
You have any other betting trends? I got odds coming in from Vegas. I guess Nick Eatman slept in as I'm getting the SS. So sorry. Just tell Nick, all good. We'll wait till Friday. We'll get Jared Sandler in here as the Sandman just walked into the studio. Not unless you don't want to talk. Screw you, too. Bet online. The risers in Vegas. Saints went from 100-1 to 50-1. This to win it all.
Yeah.
Patriots from 250-1 to 200-1. The Fallers, Jared's Green Bay Packers, from 66-1 to 33-1. The Giants from 200-1 to 400-1. The Panthers from 300-1 to 500-1.
I'll tell you this. I mean, if you can get Green Bay at 66-1 and they're going to get Jordan Love back, that's a worthwhile bet.
Out.
Yeah, Malik Willis sucks.
Yeah, but
for a couple games.
Yeah,
if they start 0-4, what are they going to make the playoffs?
Well, they could. I mean, the NFC's not
screw
like
you, Jared.
I mean, not in the AFC they wouldn't.
It's going to be awfully tough because they're going to be losing. They're going to be losing when like you look at their schedule.
You have to win 10-13 down.
Yeah, and if you look at their schedule, they've got three games that they, I don't want to say should be gimmies, but like if Jordan Love is good, and I think the jury is still out, but if Jordan Love is good, then they should be 3-1 through four games. But with Malik Willis, like a handicapper told me, listen to a handicapper talk. He told me in a podcast. That was, you know, it was just me and
you
him.
Were just listening.
Yeah. That Malik Willis, that they handicapped Malik Willis as a bad third string quarterback. Like the it's a 7.5-point swing from Love to Willis. And Malik Willis gets handicapped as if he was a bad third string quarterback.
What did you think of Philly week one?
I mean,
who did you have winning the East before the year?
Just based on the fact that no one repeats in the East, I had Philly. I didn't think Saquon was done because I wanted to see him run behind a good line. Jalen Hurts made some really dumb throws. I mean, that definitely helps the Bobby Belt argument. I mean, he Green Bay should have won that game. If Jordan Love doesn't just throw every pass off his back foot and throw some ground balls and then the receivers have like five drops, whatever, Green Bay should have won that game. I don't want to say easily, but like, they should have controlled that.
The field was awful.
It was awful, but Jalen Hurts made some inexcusable throws for a guy that level of experience who is regarded to be as good as he is. And I'm someone who has fought for him in the past.
How bad do you feel about your Caleb take after week one?
He won. Preseason? 1-0, baby.
Oh, God.
1-0.
Oh,
you don't think that his cheering on the sideline helped that pick? No. Yeah.
His nail color inspired them.
Rookie quarterbacks were awful. I know. He's going to be fine.
877-881-1053.
Be honest, did you watch Caleb Williams play?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
I saw him miss throws. He'll be all right.
Hey, don't let him bust your balls today. He had the Caleb Williams day today. He did.
Sean's been wanting to bite my head off.
I'm so freaking
here.
I'm waiting to snap on
him.
Okay,
I won't. Can I give you guys a quick thing that I heard this morning?
Yeah.
So in that game, Tennessee was up, what, 17-0?
Yeah.
So since 2018, dogs of four more points.
They're eating the dogs.
Are 61-1-1 now when leading by 17 at any point in the game in terms of covering. They still did not cover. It's the first time since 2019 that a dog of four more points has not covered when leading by 17 at any point.
It's pretty bad.
Let's have a phone call about it instead of you taking up our airtime. Crosstalk.
You invited me on.
With the K. Get the jokes. Get the jokes.
Bad producer over here.
Crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece next on 105.3 The Fan. Let's crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece. RJ Choppy is hyped up. Jared Sandler's in the room as well. Ooh. Is it rainy outside?
It was until I got about halfway here. Then it was fine.
Okay.
It was like, I mean, barely anything on my windshield.
Oh, man. I got to wash my car.
Need the rain.
Are you hoping for the rain to wash your car?
I mean, that's the best.
Why did you just trump the rain? What just happened?
That wasn't like, Trump.
That wasn't that Trump. That did sound like Trump.
Need the rain.
So you want to talk about Trump?
Let's talk about it.
Guys, we do have Boach coming up at noon today. So he's moving from his typical 12:20 to noon because of the day game of baseball that will be here right here on 105.3 The Fan.
Kevin, how much did you watch last night?
I got about 2/3 of the way through it.
And Evaldi was really struggling.
No, I'm sorry. I did think he meant the debate.
Nice setup. That was a nice setup.
I
meant the debate.
I thought the bats were struggling more than Evaldi, but... Yeah, I watched about 2/3 of the debate. Thank you. Hey, I got to be careful with Jared around. I don't have hot takes. I'm just kidding, Jared. I'm kidding.
As long as you watch the game.
Okay, fair. I bailed after about 2/3 of it.
It topped the joke.
I was like, I just can't stand this anymore.
Bobby?
No, not Bobby.
No, that's Sean. Sean can't stand me today.
Yeah. Most days.
No, today.
Today's for real.
Well, it is today most days, especially
today's really, today's really
Can
for
I
real.
Can I ask a question? Do fidgets help?
No.
No, so nothing aside from the medication helps.
Right.
Because there were a couple times this morning I was like, what the hell is he saying right now?
I gotta catch up, man. Choppy mistakenly was like, that's your Adderall. It's like, no, that is
I appreciate you saying, I know what's going on behind scenes here. Yeah. Slow down. Because
it's more than just that. He slept through the alarm and 5 minutes late ruined his whole mood and focus for the whole show. So we had to deal with that sulking and moping over being 5 minutes late. And then it just carried over, messed up my last commercial that I read, messing with my money.
Oh, no.
Getting in my pockets. At 9:15, he's asking Brett Boone a question, destroying our clock.
You know who else wants in your pockets?
All right, let's talk about it, Kevin.
All right.
Okay.
I could ask that off.
I'm going to try to, I'm sure people are going to get mad either way. There's two things that I was like, don't fall for that. You can't fall for that. But props to Kamala for baiting him on two different things. The rally was one. The other one was like, well, if my dad left me with $400 million, and I was like, don't respond to that. That is irrelevant to the question that's been asked. And then he spent most of the time talking about how I didn't really have $400 million. He got a decent amount.
He gave me a little bit of money.
He turned it into an amazing empire. And then the thing about the rallies.
Millions and millions of dollars.
Billions of dollars. I was like, just point out, did she answer the question? No. Point that out. But instead, she was like, oh, I know what to do. And he fell for it so hard.
Right, he literally had to just, every answer of his could have very easily have been, she's been in office 3.5 years. If you want to change, that could have been his answer for everything. He's a moron. He can't help himself.
That's the part I don't understand, because she was saying, well, we need a fresh start. The only response you need, the only response, who cares about your crowd size, what kind of inheritance you got, is you can just be like, the Democrats have had the presidency 12 of the last 16 years, and you are part of the current administration. So I do agree. We need to turn the page. That's it. You don't need to say anything about the size of your crowd.
Here's my nerdy question, though. You know, I'll do nerdy broadcast questions, but from a campaign advice question, does it really hurt? We keep saying he fell for it. He took the bait. Okay, so he keeps talking about his crowd sizes. Does that really turn off? You know, from a strategic standpoint, why is that so terrible? Why is that so bad to get him off on that tangent?
I worry that this will get marked, but I will argue it's not that it turns anybody off, but it doesn't turn anybody on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you saw the betting lines flip about 4.5% in Kamala Harris's favor last night. Messed that up.
Yeah.
And so you didn't turn anybody on with those kind of things. And that's the thing. You still need to win some votes out there. Both candidates.
It's got
to
be really hard, though, for him to listen to all these people, give advice, and be like, I'm a walking god everywhere I go. I got 80 million votes, and I'm going to go ahead and take it must be like Belichick hearing from the analytics nerds, right?
Yeah.
Like, everything I do, I won the presidency. I'm still the man. Everywhere I walk, people bow down or whatever. They worship me. So I'm going to go ahead and listen to what my instincts and the way I do it got me here, and I'm right.
So the only thing I would tell him, and
especially the second time versus the first.
Okay. And this is what I would tell him. I don't know if he'd listen or not. And it doesn't matter.
I don't think he would.
But yeah, that's probably true.
I don't know the point of my own setup. Here's my advice.
But whether you like Trump and you're going to vote for him, you don't like Trump, you don't want to vote for him, either way, he's playing the hits to people who are absolutely already going to vote for him. I don't think he says enough things to try to appeal to newer people frequently enough. He says things that, like, people who are 100% going to vote for him are already like, yes.
Yeah.
They're eating the dog.
Yes, I know.
That was a strange, like, that's one of the parts of the strategy for Kamala is a lot of people didn't know her.
Yeah.
So that last night was part of the campaign to get her in front of eyes that don't see, don't go to her rallies.
I just wonder what resonates with, like, people strategically. So how much of a win is it that she goes and does it really show that she's a greater sport and a higher class because she made him shake the hand?
Yeah.
Did you see the handshake this morning?
They did it again.
Who?
Kamala and Donald Harris.
Did it where? What is this, like a Super Bowl morning after presser?
At the 9/11 thing because it's September 11th. It's one of the worst days in American history, Sean.
Jeez.
So here's the video.
Remember.
I remember where I was.
Oh, I and, did not realize this.
So, yeah, so you got Vance, Trump, Biden, Schumer, and there's Kamala. Yeah, great job last night. Thank you.
Oh, he did the left hand on top.
Yeah, he did the left hand on top.
Okay.
What does that mean from a body language perspective?
It appears more sincere.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So let's shake hands. This is last night. Like, All right. And this is today. Like, hey, I'm really.
Great job last night.
Man,
great
I did feel night. Emasculated with that first one.
I know.
Yeah, that was good.
Because I put two small hands on you.
I have a question, too, on the front of. I didn't talk to my vice president or my vice president candidate about that. That's typical, right? Like, you don't typically talk to that person about things.
It depends. Cause like if you're Cheney, you were involved in every single thing, but there are some vice presidents
what are you trying
who
to say there?
Frozen out.
Cheney ran the country for a little bit.
Whoa. Yeah. No, wow. I think that's we a know. Hot take.
It's not a hot take. He was just in the room.
I think
giving
it is,
advice.
I think it is kind of funny though the whole thing that everyone gives the strategy of well you've been in there for the last 4 years and nothing has changed so now all of a sudden we are giving the vice president all the power in the world whereas before
that's right.
Vice president does nothing
that's right
and now
you can twist whatever you want to fit your next
and now why haven't you changed everything
yeah.
when the vice president before we all made the jokes did nothing
yes no that's a very fair point I'm really curious and if like. At the risk of alienating people even more. If you were an undecided voter, like, did this push you one way or another for people that are listening? Because I know there's a lot of people listening like, I'm going to vote for this person. I'm going to vote for this person. Change nothing. This was
depends
more
on what your issue is. Like, if your issue is like economy,
sure.
You have like, I think I saw a poll last night where like, he improved on the economy from before the debate.
Which makes sense to me.
But I mean, that's the Republicans' platform, right? And then. But she would have improved on issues of, I don't know, sanity, you know, being able to formulate sentences in an adult sort of way.
Choppy way.
Okay, without saying who it is, anybody in here undecided? You are?
Whoa. Okay. I'm shocked.
Did it move it for you then?
No.
Okay.
I was really disappointed. I tried.
Did you think Choppy tweeted this is just as bad as the first one? You agree?
No, this one felt more like a traditional debate in terms of everyone who was on Kamala's side agreed that she won in a landslide. Everybody who's on Trump's side agreed that he won in a landslide. It was much more.
That's why I didn't like it.
Okay.
That's why I thought it was worse. I like the chaos. I like sure. Train wrecks.
What did I write down? His bag of insults I wrote down. Someone wake Joe up at 4 p.m.
I did hear that.
Is he on the beach? President who doesn't know he's alive.
That's not who he's running against.
She likes sororities more so than meeting with Netanyahu. Did you think the moderators were unfair?
So I have seen that. It was 3-on-1. But I will tell you, I'm forgetting the name.
And have you ever seen David Muir smile?
He's handsome enough. It doesn't really matter.
He's so handsome. He really is.
I forgot the name of the female moderator.
Of course you did.
Shut up.
Exactly. Lindsay Davis.
Lindsay Davis.
He's not really undecided.
I was going to say, if you thought it was 3-on-1 against Trump, I thought she asked just the most aggressive question to Kamala Harris when she was like, you say your values haven't changed, but you flipped on fracking, you flipped on this, you flipped on that.
Yeah.
Like, that was a really intense question right there. So there were some times that I was curious, but I didn't think it was as bad as some other people were saying.
How much did you watch, Corey?
I watched more than Kevin because he texted me and was like, hey, I had to bail on this
When
thing.
Did you bail?
About 2/3 of the way through.
Okay.
I got after the break sometime. I was like, all right, I've heard enough. This is weird. And I was done with it. And it was too weird. I don't know why. I don't know if it was exactly the reason why. But when the dogs and cats came up, my dog stood up walked out of the room and then hid in our bedroom. And I was like, what is happening right now? It was wild.
What about your ducks?
Landry's a good dog, though. What's that?
What about your ducks?
The ducks, they were still out in the backyard in the pool swimming around like a bunch of a-holes.
Do you have any pets?
Quack it off.
We have two dogs.
There.
What are your dogs' names?
Boba Fetch and Bella.
I like that.
That's
good.
Man,
that's good.
Jared.
That's clever.
I was about to say,
that's
what a clever. Stupid name. I feel clever. Like.
That's clever. No, that's good. That's very like clever.
That. Okay. I've seen Star Wars now.
Okay.
Yes.
Now?
I've watched.
When's the last time you. When
Never.
Did
I watched,
you watch it for the first time when?
You watched
this
four, year five, during six? Like road trips on planes to.
Really?
I've watched 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, Solo, and Rogue One.
Okay, what are your general thoughts?
It just doesn't hit with me the same way it hits with other people, because to me it's just an old movie with bad CGI bad effects.
But what you're saying is you're allowed to be critical of it because now you've watched it?
Jeez, here we go.
I did enjoy Star Wars. It was fun. I'm not like an obsessive Star Wars fan,
sure,
but I enjoyed it. It was good. I want to watch 7, 8, 9.
Ooh.
Suck, but I want to watch
it. Did you pick up on Jar Jar? He's a Sith.
Oh my gosh.
Jared asked, is he Jewish? That was off air. Probably should have stayed off air. We're back tomorrow morning. BK.
Yeah.
Did you think he said, is he a Seth?
No, I thought you said
I thought that's what you thought. I don't think that's an exclusive name. I don't know.
Hit it, Peyton. Just hit it.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.